This is episode 347 with the 50-mile world record holder, two-time U.S. Olympic marathon trials qualifier, and 216 marathoner, Charlie Lawrence. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald, and my singular goal is to help you improve your running by getting stronger, racing faster, preventing more injuries, and achieving more of your goals. I'm a former cross-country and track and field athlete for Connecticut College, a columnist for Trail Runner magazine, a 239 marathoner, and at one time, a proud steeplechaser. You can learn more about me and strength running at strengthrunning.com. And I couldn't continue this show without the support of our partners. I hope you'll take advantage of the discounts that they're offering. You should definitely hook yourself up with some free electrolytes from our sponsor, Element. They're offering a free gift with your purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And this does not have to be your first purchase. You're going to get a sample pack with every flavor so you can try them all before deciding what you like best. If you're not familiar, Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make electrolytes for athletes and low-carb folks with no sugar, no artificial ingredients or colors. I'm now in the habit of giving away boxes of Element at group runs whenever I attend in Denver or Boulder, and everyone loves this stuff. It can be very helpful as a way to prevent dehydration when you're running long or running a hard workout. If you sometimes feel overly tired or you get headaches, cramps, or sleeplessness after long runs or workouts, you might have an electrolyte imbalance or a deficiency. You can boost your performance and your recovery, especially in the heat, with Element. They're the exclusive hydration partner to Team USA Weightlifting, and quite a few professional baseball, hockey, and basketball teams are on regular subscriptions. Plus, Element is my go-to morning beverage if I've frequented one of Denver's many breweries the night before and I just want my morning to feel a little smoother. Check them out at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. You'll get your free sample pack gift with your purchase, and you can get your hydration optimized for the upcoming season. Thanks to Prevenex for offering 15% off your first purchase at Prevenex.com with code Jason15. Prevenex is a unique supplement company that holds itself to standards that the rest of the industry doesn't. And they're celebrating the release of Muscle Health Plus, which is a unique combination of amino acids, creatine, and ingredients that aid protein synthesis and the absorption of amino acids. This is your anti-soreness supplement. It will help you prevent muscle damage, which is a particularly important thing for aging runners who want to protect themselves from muscle loss and recover faster after hard workouts or long runs. Now, as is true for all of their products, Prevenex adheres to the highest of standards. Their ingredients are clinically proven to do what they say they're going to do. So yes, Muscle Health Plus has ingredients that are clinically proven to improve protein synthesis and the absorption of amino acids, critical for helping promote lean muscle mass, strength, recovery, and better body composition. I've been consistently impressed with all of their supplements and how committed they are to transparent, clinically proven ingredients, from Joint Health Plus to Neurify, Immune Support, and now Muscle Health Plus. Prevenex has you covered no matter your needs. Kim just used our discount code and wrote in, quote, "Doing a self-test of taking the amino acids after heavy workouts and then not taking the amino acids, I can feel a great difference in my muscles. I was quite speculative, but now I highly recommend it." There's also Heidi who wrote, quote, "Amazing results. I felt a huge difference in just a matter of days. Goodbye arthritis-related knee and bunion pain that years of glucosamine never touched." I love it. Get 15% off your first Prevenex purchase by using code Jason15 at checkout. You can visit Prevenex.com. That's Prevenex.com. And just remember, they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee where if you don't feel the benefits on their product, you get your money back, no questions asked. Okay, my guest today is a world record holder. Charlie Lawrence set the record in the 50-mile distance last year in 4 hours, 48 minutes, and 21 seconds, an unbelievable average of 5:46 per mile. He also ran his marathon PR of 2:16 while qualifying for the U.S. Olympic Trials Marathon for the second time. But not everything about Charlie's running is rainbows and unicorns. He had a combination of three major injuries that we're going to go into detail during this conversation earlier this year, and it forced him to drop out of the trials marathon in Orlando in early February. He's been rehabbing since then and is only just now getting back into some running. And Charlie is the embodiment of a strong work ethic. The way he approaches his running and cross training is incredibly inspiring and will no doubt make you rethink how you train. I obviously wanted to connect with Charlie to see how a world record holder puts together a training cycle, how he approached his recovery, and just as importantly, how he stayed in shape while not being able to run. We're going to hear a lot about how Charlie made the decision to drop out of the trials, how he's treated his injuries, and his perspectives on endurance training. By the way, if this show has brought you any value and you want to support us any further, make sure you're actually following or subscribed on whatever podcast player you listen. On Apple, if you go to the show page, there's a small button on the top right-hand side that says follow. And on Spotify, on the show page, right under the show art, there is a follow button. Smash those buttons. This helps you because you never miss an episode, and it helps us because, well, you never miss an episode. And now, without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Charlie Lawrence. All right. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie. I'm glad you're here.
Jason, happy to be on, dude. Thanks for asking me to be on. And of course, I've heard of your podcast for a while, and obviously some mutual friends made it happen. So kind of a long time coming, I think.
And here we are. I'm not only glad to talk to you, I'm very glad to see that you're running these days. You had some injuries at the beginning of this year. Can you maybe talk about like what happened? Because it was, I think, a fairly serious series of injuries that you experienced, and you're back to running now. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, gradually running now. It's kind of funny. I'm not, about an hour and a half ago, I had a text exchange with my doctor who did my PRP. Kind of told him that I was, ran a little bit on Monday, on Tuesday, ran this morning. He's kind of asking how I'm feeling, like a little bit of soreness. He's like, yeah, let's dial it back a little bit. So, getting back to the injury, ended up about 12, 13 days before the trials down in Orlando. Just kind of felt a little bit of tightness kind of in my upper glute side of my, the glute med area. Didn't really think anything of it because there's always something, you know, kind of bothering you, this and that. And day by day, just got a little worse. Did a workout a week out from the trials. And the next day I'm running with Ryan and Dez. We're staying at an Airbnb down in Kissimmee, drove up to Orlando to run the course. And every, like, you're kind of going through Orlando downtown-ish, so there's stoplights and stuff you got to wait for. And every stoplight, I'm just like kind of poking at it, like feeling it's like it's stiffening up as I stop. And we start going again, just kind of getting a little worse and worse. Obviously, we're a week out from the trials. I'm not really thinking anything different. I'm like, well, if it's a glute issue, I'm not too worried about it. It'll be fine. So, I guess long story short, just got worse by the day. Did my pre-race workout on it. Ended up being like 6x800, 3x400. The Tuesday ended up, I didn't, like, it wasn't going to get any better. We'll say that, but it definitely didn't help my cause. Ended up doing the 800, so 222 down to 209 was my last one. So, I felt pretty good. But after that, it just, like, locked up on me. I tried shaking out the afternoon, like, couldn't even get out the door. I guess limped through a 15-minute shakeout. Ultimately, like, drove to Orlando Thursday, race is Saturday. Honestly, should have just taken that time off, but went ahead. Obviously, lined up. Like, the goal is, and I took enough, honestly, Tylenol and Aleve to hopefully, like, get over it. I'm like, I won't feel it. So, the first 3-4 miles felt nothing. And all of a sudden, just every step was just getting worse and worse. So I kept convincing myself, you know, get to 10K, get to my next bottle at 10, get to half. And it just like kept getting worse and worse. And by the time I was like, ended up catching up to like run into a few people that I knew and they're like, yeah, right. I'm like, you look like you're limping. I'm like, yeah, I'm on one leg. So I tried to force it for another couple miles into pulling out, right around 15, unfortunately. So not fun. And we just thought it was like a glute strain, a really bad kind of glute med strain. Got back to Boulder a couple of days after the trials. I couldn't, like, walk through the airport. It was miserable. I was limping. noticeably. I couldn't roll over in bed. It wasn't fun. But so I decided you're on 16 miles at 15 miles at 5:10 pace. It's not going to feel good, you know? So, MRI about 2-ish weeks after, I tried to kind of hold it off. I'm like, it'll get better. Didn't really get any better. It's finally, when my physios convinced me to get an MRI. So got one, and turns out I tore my labrum, tore my glute med and glute minimus. So, not an optimal scenario, but, here we are. We're jogging a little bit now.
Yeah. Not an optimal scenario at all. And I think every runner has been in that situation where they're running and something feels a little off and it's a little tight, but you have no idea what's going on. And, you know, the hope is always, let me just get to the next mile marker and it'll start feeling better. But that is not a strategy that works every single time. I know how hard it can be to drop out of a race, especially a big race like the US Olympic marathon trials. I mean, that's like running's kind of Super Bowl day for a lot of folks. Was that hard for you? I mean, were you like thinking, oh my God, I'm a failure? Or were you thinking, this is a logical decision to, you know, kind of preserve my future running career? Like, were you super logical about it? Or did you have those sort of natural emotional feelings about, you know, I'm dropping out of such an important race? Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. Like, obviously a lot of disappointment. Like, cause I thought truthfully on the right day, I could have been top 20. I think I was fit enough to be drawn 2:15 mid on that day. Which, you know, would have got me roughly right there. So, so that sucks because you guys want to show up on the day and compete at your best, but I just wasn't healthy, and that's hard to be your best. So pulling out, like, it sucks. You hate to do it. Like, I've only ever pulled out for an injury. Like, I'm not pulling out just cause I'm having like a rough day, you know, and everyone has those. So like finding out, you know, initially if I thought it was just like a glute strain or whatever, felt bad just dropping out, but obviously knowing I'd torn two different muscles and a little bit of my labrum in my hip makes you feel, you know, a little better about it. And it's like, all right, we're doing a little bit of damage control. So, and ultimately too, I was, you know, looking forward to like this year and, you know, making sure I was on the 100K world team coming up this December. Obviously I can't run, the US championships coming up in Mad City on April 20th anymore, but that would have been kind of the game plan. So I was like, well, in the back of my mind, I'm like, if you pull up now before it gets too bad, maybe you can, you know, again, if it was just like a glute strain or something, I easily could be on that line in, you know, 2-ish weeks. But that's, you know, not the case. So, a little bit of disappointment for sure, but knowing just how bad it was, it's like, all right, you've made the right decision. So
we're talking about roughly 3 months, maybe 2.5 months of no running at all. You just got started this week. I'm curious, like what the treatment looked like, you know, because you had numerous things going on at the same time with multiple muscle strains or tears.
Tears.
Wow. You, when you get injured, you do it right, man.
Yeah. I go hard. Yeah. That's the thing. In 2022, I grade forward myself with a sacral stress fracture because I just kept running on it. You know, it was like 4 weeks out from US champs. It was like, oh, you'll be fine. I'll get better. And it just obviously doesn't. So, I've learned the hard way a few times and haven't actually learned, you know, I've just done it the hard way. So,
yeah. So walk us through a little bit about like how you approached such a serious injury that is multiple injuries in one. Because I'm sure the treatment for each one was a little bit different and you sort of had to combine them into one approach, right?
Yeah. So it's pretty multifaceted with that being, you know, essentially three different injuries in one. So one thing I'm not good at is resting. So even the next day I got back to Boulder, you know, this race was on a Saturday, Sunday, took that Sunday off because I just literally couldn't function, couldn't walk. I'm like grabbing, you can see me, but I'm a daughter audience kind of like, you know, grabbing my tables and stuff just to walk around like my apartment and stuff. And, but I'm like, you know, I'll go to the pool the next morning. So Monday morning I was in the pool, aqua jog for about 90 minutes, hoping it would, you know, flush stuff out, feel better. And it just didn't, you know? So, that was for a week I was in the pool, hoping it would get a little better and it didn't. Wanted to try running the next week. Just even walking wasn't comfortable. So it's like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. And then finally I was like, well, we need to probably get an MRI. Cause I was going in for needles, PT, you know, some, you know, other like just manual work, like muscle stim, that kind of work on it. And just cause we thought it was just a glute issue, you know? and just a ton of like glute band work, strengthening work on the side, but probably almost just overdoing it to the point where it was just kind of aggravating it more. So after we got the MRI, I was like, all right, we need to like let this calm down. So for a couple weeks, it was just strictly pool. Don't even hop on the bike. But then after a couple weeks, kind of late March now. So even a few weeks ago, I was able to, I'll back up. A week ago, I was able to lever. So do that. That was 3 weeks post PRP, but towards, I guess, the back end of February, I messed up March. I was able to bike a little more. So, but it was just like very, very non-impact pool running, not swimming because you don't want to kick too much. So I was just kind of flushing the legs, doing that, gradually adding in bike. And then, I was able to lever on what was March 25th, that Monday. Then on the ground, which was this past Monday, April 1st, but kind of slower process than I like, because I like to get after it if I can. But I guess also backing up, ended up getting PRP, flew back to Minnesota. My doctor got me in, came in on the weekend, opened up his clinic on the weekend for me, that like Saturday, March 1st or 2nd, whenever that was, to do PRP, because I couldn't get in really anywhere else until later in the month. So hopefully that kind of fast-tracked the recovery.
So let's define a couple things so that we're not totally losing anyone who's listening right now. PRP is platelet-rich plasma. Am I right on that?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So they do a blood draw. So take, I think it was like 5 or 6 vials of like fairly large vials of blood, put it in one of the centrifuges, spin it. So it's just a pure plasma, and they re-inject it into, and it was like, don't quote me on the number, probably 15 different points throughout like my groin area, and just working all the way around like my glutes and around to like towards the back. So just hitting every point of that labrum to help it like regenerate the, collagen or whatever in there. So
yeah, all that connective tissue in there.
Connective tissue. There you go.
And then when you said you were using the lever or levering, what exactly is that?
So it's we'll call it a broke man's Alter G. So it's a
say no more. Now, for some reason, I know exactly what you mean now.
Yeah. So it's just a like an offloading device. You put on these shorts with these rollers on the side. You can use a bungee to take weight off or run on your treadmill. So it's a tool that I've used, fortunately, more than I would have liked to come back from some injuries. But it's super, super useful. Just to honestly, for me, it was like just take off. When I started, I took off about 40 pounds, and gradually took weight off throughout the past week. But sorry, at 40 pounds is just a way to honestly get time off the pool and or get time off the bike and out of the pool for me. So, which is honestly just a nice little mental break. So, but between cross training, all that, I set myself a minimum at 2 hours a day of cross training. When I kind of got the green light, like a week or so after PRP.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been really hard because on the one hand, you're dealing with a situation where you've got multiple injuries. They're somewhat serious. You've got to rest and deal with healing those injuries. You can't really worry about training, quote unquote training. But on the other hand, you can't just lose all your fitness over 2 to 3 months because you're really going to backslide and lose all of those gains that you've gotten over, your entire running career that you've built up over time. And so that's why I'm assuming you're cross training for an extraordinary 2 hours a day. And this, this reminds me of like kind of the college atmosphere where if you get hurt in college, you're kind of expected to continue your training on, a stationary bike or to get in the pool. Walk us through some of your thoughts on, cross training for that much per day, because I think a lot of people will hear that and be like, oh my God, aren't you supposed to be resting? How are you supposed to be getting better when you're exercising so much per day?
Yeah, it's just building that engine. And I'll even like go back to when I had my grade 4 sacral in 2022. I set a minimum like back then that I was going to do like 3 to 5 hours a day. So now I'm like, so mentally two hours feels like I'm almost slacking a bit. So, and my mentality is just build that engine. And we'll get into this eventually, but like when I got injured in 2022, like in the back of my head, I was like, I want to go break the 50-mile world record. I'm going to be running for almost 5 hours, So it's like, so why would a 6-hour bike ride bother me? Or why does 3 hours in the pool like bother you? It's like, you're going to have to be running. Running 5 hours is arguably way more difficult than being in the pool for 3 hours or biking for 6, I feel like I have to do like 5 hours on the bike to get equivalent to a 90-minute run, So for me, it's just building that aerobic base and keeping that base as solid as possible, just so that when you do hit the ground running, that pretty much your legs kind of have to like recallus up that the engine's already there and still intact. And hopefully your legs catch up quickly enough. So, but yeah, that's just the mentality. Keep that engine strong.
I love it. It seems like a very aggressive mentality. And, you said earlier, you like to go big. I joked that even with injuries, you like to go big. How do you think that mentality is one of the reasons why you've been so successful? Because it seems like you recognize the extraordinary amount of work it will take to reach an extraordinary goal, say, for example, the 50-mile world record. And, it makes a lot of logical sense. Like, okay, I'm going to be running kind of fast for almost 5 hours. So why would 5 hours in the pool or on the bike, really bother me? But I think for most people to like have that kind of perspective, that's an alien perspective. They're like, wow, that is way too much time. It's way too aggressive. But also at the same time, I'm like, well, that's what it takes. And I'm very deeply respectful of it. I'm just wondering if you can speak to a little bit of like your relationship with, your aggression in training.
Yeah, it's just honestly like whatever it takes and whatever I think, and I'll say this too. I have a lot of people that pull the reins back on me, whether it's Dez, whether it's Plaz, my college coach, or even my former coach, Corey Leslie. I was with Roots Running, up until I decided to dabble in ultras, their pure marathon group. So a lot of reins being pulled back. But for me, it's just like, I want to optimize. I want to do everything I can in this sport. And I think what I want to do requires a lot of extra work, like building that engine, time on feet, 140, 150 miles a week. Even this morning I ran just 8 miles, but I did 45 minutes of prehab stuff. Like, it's for a hour run. Just doing all the little things just to get the most out of what I'm doing every single day. And I think too, going back to your point, it's like, I think I have to do these things to go and get a 50-mile world record to, go chase a 100K world record, in the future now, or go hopefully get a world title at the end of this year. It's like, to do something special, you have to do some pretty special things in training. Obviously you want to save the most special thing for the race day, but you have to be able to have the work behind it to back up what you're about to do or trying to do. And I'd always kind of, it's not fun being injured, but I'd rather ride that line of injury and I'm getting absolutely everything out of myself to go and achieve those things versus just kind of doing solid training, checking all the boxes and being constantly healthy. I know it's kind of a risk reward type thing, but the reward is 100% worth the risk in my opinion.
Yeah. Have you found that sort of as your career has progressed, as you've gotten a little older, you've put more importance on the prehab, the cross training, the little things, like all the things that sort of enable you to run 140, 150 miles a week, to stay healthy, all the things that sort of supplement, the actual running you're doing? Because on the one hand, you've got to do the running because that's the thing, that's the main thing that's going to help you get to your goals. But on the other hand, all the little things support the main thing and really allow you to do it more consistently. Has your thinking on that evolved over time?
Truthfully, no. I've always been kind of the one that would do extra time foam rolling, pre-run, doing extra activation work, doing extra stuff in the weight room, extra core. That's just kind of always innately been built into me from a super, super young age, truthfully. And I would do just, again, some very, very, very basic. Hop on a foam roller, some quick band work, get out the door in 10 minutes, even when I was working full-time prior to joining Hanson's back in 2018, I was running at like 4:45 was my alarm. I'd be out the door by 5-ish, 5:10. I'd still try to hop on the foam roller just real quick, flush and get out, tie my shoes, touch my toes, light leg swings and go. Especially when I joined Hanson's, I remember I was like getting for a run, doing my stuff. I pulled up to the parking lot and Dathan was a meeting us. He was in town and he was just doing all kinds of stuff on a mat. I'm like, damn, you're really getting after it, huh, man? He goes, yeah, well, it's our job, dude. We gotta make sure we're ready to roll for our job. You're not going to show up unprepared, are you? I'm like, nope. Say less. Of course, it's Dathan, somebody grew up like looking up to, respecting all that's like, salute, say less. So that just obviously like validated everything that I was doing. And, obviously it took some of the stuff that he was doing and implanted into mine and stuff that I still do, to this day.
I had a little poster of Dathan Ritzenhine in my cross country locker when I was in high school. And so, yeah, whatever Dathan says, I'd be like, yes, sir. Absolutely. I will do that yesterday.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's the thing too. You grew up there, like growing up, even, you know, middle school, high school, it was, you know, Ritz and Galen, you know, were the guys on the US side. Then, you know, just be able to pick his brain whenever and be his teammate was pretty cool. Robin and Jordan Hansen. So.
Hey, a quick break to thank our partner Element for their support. You should check them out. Element is my favorite way to hydrate. They make a delicious, sugar-free, high-sodium electrolyte that's perfect for runners with a high sweat rate or very salty sweat, like I have. Now, if that's you, you're going to want all 1,000 milligrams of sodium that's included in Element. Electrolytes play a key role in helping you avoid dehydration, dizziness, cramps, and overall tiredness, especially after long runs or workouts. And Element is used by the military, law enforcement, professional sports teams, and they're the official hydration partner of Team USA Weightlifting. Get a free sample pack with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning. And they'll let you try every flavor before you decide what you like best. That's drinklmnt.com/strengthrunning for your free sample pack. Hey, just a short break for our partner Prevenex, the only supplement company that I trust. They've just released their new product, Muscle Health Plus. This is your anti-soreness supplement, a combination of creatine, branch chain, and essential amino acids, as well as ingredients to aid protein synthesis and absorption. Use code JASON15 for 15% off your first order at Prevenex.com. Now, if you're a master's runner, you want to build some muscle, or if you're particularly injury prone, Muscle Health Plus is going to help you hold onto your muscle and rebound faster from those workouts and long runs. See all the details at Prevenex.com and be sure to use code JASON15 to save 15% off your first purchase. So I'm excited to hear that you're actually doing some real running outside. Your full body weight these days. You said you ran 8 miles this morning. Walk us through a little bit of like what your first run was like. I mean, what is the approach for someone who has torn a couple muscles, who has had labrum issues, and now they're getting back into running? Was it like 15 minutes of just very easy jogging just to see how it felt? Like, how do you progress from months of being injured to going for an 8 mile run?
Yeah, it was just so, and I'll say this too, it was fortunate where I was able to get after some bike sessions, you know, just keep that volume in the pool, still in the gym every other day, just kind of just getting stronger, just making sure. So when I do take those first steps, everything's gonna be a little easier. Definitely should have gone about 10, 15 minutes, ended up going about 28, ran 4 miles. And just, you know, it was just kind of testing the water, seeing how things felt. Obviously things felt a little awkward, weren't necessarily as fluid, but then when I ran on Tuesday, felt a little more open, a little easier. Still feeling into some like residual like soreness and stuff. And that's when I was communicating with my doctor earlier today. And he's like, all right, yeah, let's have you back off a little bit, take a couple days in the pool. You know, just try to go, you know, every other day running, you don't need to go back to back. But he's like, but if you do it right, you can probably be full bore come, you know, early May 1st. So that's kind of fingers crossed. I'm just kind of listening to him. But yeah, it felt, you know, it felt about as good as it could have, truthfully, I think, just coming off of, you know, how severe the injury was. So, but again, too, I've had great care with my physios, you know, my PT, Kyle, Block Up in the Long Run with my chiropractor. So just make sure everything's like fluid, moving. Marcus, my massage therapist, and obviously, Dr. Baumgartner in Minnesota kind of checking up on me to make sure return to runs going smooth. So, definitely those guys keep the leash on me, keep a good eye on me for sure. So,
yeah. So it sounds like, you know, after being injured for 2 to 3 months, pretty seriously, with a really good team around you, it's still going to take a minimum of about 6 weeks of sort of this long on ramp back to normal training to get you to a level where maybe you're comfortable running 100 miles a week or 120 miles a week. And I think that's just like a really good lesson for anybody listening who's dealing with a serious injury, is that even with the best team around you, with physios and coaches and massage therapists and all these folks helping you navigate this time of uncertainty, it's still going to take like a month or two once you're healthy to get back to where you were. And even when you're back to normal training, you're probably not going to have the same fitness level that you did in like early January when you were ready to run, say, a 2:15 marathon. So I think that's just, it's encouraging that even some of the best runners in the world like take a long time to get back to their regular fitness level, to heal from an injury. And I think that's encouraging because, you know, you're one of the best runners in the world, and it still takes you months and months and months to heal and get back into things.
Yeah. And we just have to get it right, you know, and do it right. Where it's like, obviously I would have loved to be racing, you know, in a couple weeks at Mad City trying to win a 100K title, you know, and then locking up the auto spot for the world team. Then I focus on that December 7th. But now it's like, I had to scrap really my summer racing. It's like, all right, like, let's just get healthy through the back half of the spring, I guess, kind of early spring now, I guess, but through the spring, just build fitness through the summer, like have fun training. Don't do anything super specific, crazy. Just get fit. Obviously tempos, twos and hills, classic stuff, like build up the long run base. And then get specific, you know, back end of August, September, October. And then hopefully at that point we're selected for the world team. And then we're honed in on that December 7th, but we're just going to kind of prepare as we are and just have that date circled on December 7th and just know we have time and not rush it, which is, I'm always the person that wants to rush too quickly, but it's my team that's always like, chill out a little bit. Like, you know, we have time, you know, like they're like, that's exactly what he told me. That text was like, when's Worlds again? I'm like, December 7th. He's like, yeah, dude, like don't push it right now. Like I'm four days into running on the ground and I've run three out of the last 4 days. It's probably, probably a little aggressive. So.
Yeah, man, there's that aggression again. But at the same time, like that aggression is also getting you onto the bike for hours and hours or onto the pool for hours. And that's certainly helping you stay in great shape. Have you done anything in actually, let me back up a second. I want to double click on something you said. You said something interesting to me. It was like, we're going to do basic things like twos and hills. Hills, obviously, some variation of a hill workout. What are twos?
200s, just like the classic. That's actually a Dathan workout where you go, he'll sometimes switch it, but it'll be like, you know, go 8x200, 200 jog, and then go do 8x30 second hills, you know, just basic kind of speed work. And honestly, just going back to even like, I'm thinking out loud as I'm like saying this, like, and just hills too, just get stronger, you know, like without needing to go on the track and rip fours, sixes, or eights or anything. Like just go do 30, 45, 60, 90 second hills, you know, as an intro session. That's kind of a plaz, C plus N, my college coach, kind of a staple of his early season was just go run the hills hard, you know, get fit, keep the tempos in. Yeah, just kind of just general running fitness without getting super, super specific.
Yeah. I think the introductory speed sessions, I think are underrated for so many different reasons. Cause you know, so many runners love to just, I'm going to go run 6x800 and they're trying to run 800s at like, you know, their mile race pace or something crazy for a workout like that. And, you know, I think especially for adult runners, you know, who are not world record holders, you get more out of some of the easier workouts cause it's just more sustainable. They're more developmental in nature and less specific. And you just build more capabilities from doing stuff like that. When you start doing the real specific stuff, it's fun and it looks so sexy on Strava. You're going to get so many kudos, but you know, it's very specific and it really funnels you down a very narrow path. I love the general stuff because I think that's what builds your capacity over time. Let me get off my general training soapbox for a second though. I know I love that stuff. But.
No, you're good. Like there's something to it. Like even my marathon build, my initial one in 2018 up to CIM, Plaz was still coaching me, like finish up, being collegiately. And it was hard working. I was a ticket sales rep. I sold seasons, partial plans, and groups for the Minnesota Gophers. So the school I competed for, which was an awesome job right out of college. Loved it. And like middle of the week, it was hard to, you know, because the more I'm in the office, the more money I'm making. It's a sales job. So it's, most days were 7:30 to 5:30 or 6:00. And then it's, you know, run before, double after dinner, go to sleep, you know, didn't have much of a life, truthfully. But like the weekends would usually free up depending on when games were. So I'd usually do like a track session Saturday, into a long run Sunday, but then in the middle of the week, Plaza like, well, if you have time for a tempo, do that. I was like, just jog to like the River Road Hill and do like hill repeats, like long hills. So one of his staples, like even a specific marathon block, I was doing like 90, 60, 90 or 2 minute reps or minute reps, where it's like 90 seconds up, 6 seconds down, crest that 90, jog all down recovery, 3 or 4 sets, jog home. Don't need to change shoes. Just get into it. Like it's 5:20 in the morning, dude. Like, you know, just get a good effort in. So, and I think that's, you know, a way to still, again, just build a lot of fitness, neuromuscular power, some power work, and, you know, ran 2:16:10 off of that kind of cycle, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I ran my mile PR after not really doing like too many super fast, hard workouts. I was like, oh, I'm just doing like strides and 200s. And, you know, I was doing some hill work. It was really funny. Do you like sort of romanticize that time in your life where all you did was like train in the morning, go to work, train in the evening, go to sleep, and like that was your life? Because I had that experience too, right after college. I was living at home for about a year after college, and I was running like 80, 85 miles a week, which was a lot for me at the time. And I had like a big commute into Boston. And so my entire day was just running, commuting, working, eating a little bit, and then sleeping. And I did nothing else. And it was awful, but I sort of look back on it and I'm like, it was so simple. And there's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, you just like, I didn't have time to think. You just operated like, it was just automatic. Like alarm goes off, bang, throw on your stuff, bathroom, like said, quick roll out, eat a banana while you're going down the elevator, like boom, go. Get back, 10 minutes to stretch, roll out, shower, quick breakfast, boom, office. You know, just like day in, day out, that was it. You, again, it was just like you're on autopilot. Whereas now I'm pretty fortunate where my day is completely pretty much surrounded, or like my day operates around my training. You know, like I'm fortunate that's kind of all I have to do most days, which is great. But sometimes you overthink it. And it was just honestly, obviously a lot more to do back then, but it was almost a lot more simplified because you didn't have an option. You just had to boom, 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 boom. Now it's like, you know, judging, I met one of my friends this morning, Aiden, out here in North Boulder for a run. It was like, all right, we're going to meet at 7. So it was like, obviously a little more routine than most days. I'm pretty routined in like the same time I run. But after in the middle of the day, it's like pretty unstructured besides like when I'm eating my lunch and stuff, getting ready for my second session. Yeah, it's definitely romanticized it a little bit. It's a grind for sure. Not that, wasn't that sexy, truthfully, but we got it done.
Yeah. I remember thinking to myself, I never want to do this again, but at the same time, the lack of thinking is something that I really like. I think there's really something to be said about having a schedule where you don't give yourself any time or opportunity to second guess yourself or to say, am I motivated to go do this workout? It's like, no, you don't have time to think about that. You just need to go do it. And I really like that because I think scheduling and sort of putting some kind of structure around your running is a really good thing for just adherence and motivation and sort of just keeping yourself on track. Charlie, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your run last year, the 50-mile world record. You ran 50 miles in 4:48:21, which I had to do the math on this. It's about 5:46 a mile. I'm just so impressed with a record like this because it just seems like such a hard distance to run well. It's long enough to obviously be a pretty long ultra marathon, but it also seems short enough where you can run it pretty hard. How did you prepare for a performance like this? Can you give us a glimpse into, you know, your mileage levels, your key workout sessions, and really how you approached the demands of trying to run 50 miles at, you know, 5:46 a mile?
Yeah. I mean, the best way to put it is honestly just a lot of time on feet and kind of cumulative fatigue build up throughout the build. So it started really late July, early August, prepping for it. And I'll kind of circle back to what I was saying. I was injured in 2022 with my grade 4 sacral. So that's when the Olympic trials window opened up and I didn't get a chance to race. I raced January 22. My next race was February 23. And I wasn't really all that fit through that time. Cause like, at the time I really had to kind of honestly take a step back where I was just purely kind of cross training almost for a large majority of 2022. So not a ton of actual running done. Just kind of making sure I was recovering properly from the sacral. And Richie with Roots at the time, my coach, was very, very conservative and like rightfully so, you know, I cracked my sacrum in half. So really like once I was knew I was fully healthy, able to build up for it, knew I had it on the calendar, was all right, like let's double down and commit. So, I'll kind of walk you through, I guess, my kind of cycling that I was doing, like racing or like my, I'll call it like a 2 week cycle and then it would reset. So it'd be like a typical like Tuesday, like tempo session, Friday track session, Sunday long run where I'm going like out to Tom Watson here in Boulder. I'll do drills, a couple strides, change and do flats. And I'd go run, like I'm not coming back to the lot until I go run 24, 25 miles at sub six pace out the gate, just holding it. Come back and then shake out that afternoon. Then the next week I would go like a Wednesday, bigger session, usually like a broken tempo, like let's say 3x4 miles. And then that next Saturday would also be another kind of long run session, but like a longer warm up and then go into like a 5 mile tempo, mile float, 2 mile push, mile float, 5 mile tempo, long cool down to get to 24-ish miles in the morning, and then reset back to the Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. So that's kind of how I followed it. I do strength training the day before every session just to get stuff like more activated, firing, nothing that fatiguing. And then I would double every single day besides Monday, because that's when I'd see Marcus. That's when I see Marcus, my massage therapist. So that's just, that'd be usually an easy just 14 or 15 miles in the morning. But the recovery days were 14 and 4 or 15 and 5, depending on how I felt and was structured. And even on those long run days where I do 24 in the morning, I'm doubling back to get six to call it a 30 piece on the day. So just a ton of mileage, big block work. You know, there was blocks between, it was like first week of August to the, well, I ran 20K champs and that was still a 120 mile week. I came down from 140-ish that week, but then shot back up. So we'll say like kind of that stretch, I, you know, had 4 weeks of 4 weeks within there that were, you know, 140 to 145. The bookends ones were, you know, 135, 133, 132, had like a 128 high, just a lot of volume, a lot of miles. Honestly, a lot of just kind of extracurricular stuff, making sure everything's fluid. I guess not extracurricular, like ancillary work, you know, like I was saying that the activation, pre-run, post-run, you know, post-lift, all that stuff, just to kind of hand, to be able to handle the workload. But that was kind of the gist of it. So,
well, I'm assuming you're sleeping like 13 hours a day to recover from all this.
So I was sleeping a lot. So one, like I don't really nap, which is like, I have a, this is a tangent story. So in college, like I would nap a little bit in college. And there was one time I got too close to practice where like, let's say we practice at 2:30 every day. And I took a nap at like noon. I woke up at, it was 2:22 when I woke up, and it was just like the anxiety that hit me. You know, it was my freshman year, and luckily I was a block from the locker room. So just, you know, busted over real quick, you know, changed and went to practice. But, so since then I really haven't napped, truthfully. I have to be really, really,
you
really
haven't
tired.
Napped again.
Yeah. Like I have to be super, super tired to nap. But, yeah, on like most mornings or most nights I'm in bed at 8 PM, sleep until 5:45 ish. If I have like, let's say I have like a big session, like it's a, you know, Sunday session, I'll get up at 5:15 ish just to make my bottles, really start activation. And I usually like to get those started by 7:15 ish, 7:30 at the very latest. Just cause those are sometimes 2.5 hour mornings, you know, you get done, it's 10:30. So I like being able to double then 7 hours later. So I'm not doubling like super, super late. But yeah, a lot of like, it's, but as soon as I hit the rock at eight, like I'm cashed out within 5 minutes, you know, it's phone down, head down, lights out. So.
Walk us through a little bit of like what a long run at 6 minute mile pace feels like. Cause it seems like you just get right into it. You know, you don't have a mile or two where, you know, you're just warming up. You're sort of just going right into 6 minute pace. And so like, is that an easy effort for you? Like where do you consider zone two? I know a lot of runners right now kind of anchor their easy running, which a long run is usually kind of just a glorified easy run for a lot of runners. It's just a longer easy run, but you're approaching it a little bit differently. And I'm wondering like what your mindset is on that.
Yeah. It's just being able to be semi uncomfortable for a very, very, very long time, like from the gun. Cause that's kind of what a marathon is. Obviously it's like, you want to be pretty relaxed, like feel easy enough, but it's going to be uncomfortable to an extent until it gets very uncomfortable, hopefully after, you know, 30 ish K, you know, mile 20. So that's just kind of just simulating that, like getting on it right away and just sticking it and being in that kind of headspace where like, you know, when you're cracking, but it's not easy, you know? So, and that's just something that I've always done, like excelled at, is like those type of efforts, you know, where it's not, we're not doing anything at marathon or definitely above marathon, you know, 30-ish seconds plus, you know, 540, 545, 550. But I can just hold that for a super, super long time. And honestly, longer than I think pretty much anyone you can name, you know? So, and that's just been a long, long build of just steady progression all the way from college with Plaz, gradually building me up, you know, through the long run, where I was one of the guys where he rarely let people go over 2 hours, but I was the one person that can kind of handle it in the last couple of years, was just in recovering well off of it. Just being able to push sub six very, very, very early, sticking it and, recovering off of it and getting ready to do it, you know, a week or so again later. So, yeah, it's just, again, practicing that, just being in that space where it's, you know, like I said, not super easy, but it's not super hard, and just like sitting there and getting used to it and enjoying it. And, you know, just kind of semi-race practice to an extent.
Now compare that to like one of your slowest days of the week, you know, maybe one of your double sessions is just like, you know, an easy jog. Like what are some of the really easy miles? What kind of pace is that at?
I'm running like first mile would be 740 to 750, you know, on like on my shakeouts, especially like, let's say I go run that 25 miles at, you know, 545, 550 pace in the morning, like that next, that evening five is going to be super chill, super slow, just flushing stuff where you feel pretty bad the first couple of miles, but you typically feel a little better towards the end. So that's kind of the goal of it. Just a little extra time on feet, flush it out, like never breaking 7 minute pace on that, like nowhere near it. Even some mornings where like I'll go back and, you know, the next Monday morning after a session like that on a Sunday, I'll do 14 or 15 and it'll be, you know, 720 pace, like at the fastest, you know, or maybe like the overall average will be 720 or the first miles, heck, even sometimes near 8 minutes. So it's just flushing everything out, like no rush, recovery zone. I'm not too, you'll kind of laugh at this. You mentioned zone two and I couldn't tell you what zone two is, you know, like I just have, you know, my long run pace, my tempo pace, my, you know, threshold-ish sessions, and then, you know, marathon specific type work and obviously recovery days. So.
Yeah. You are a runner. So you care about pace. You are not some lab experiment caring about your physiological state in some zone or something like that. And I think, you know, hearing that you're running 745, 750 pace, that is 2 minutes per mile slower than your 50 mile pace. And so that's probably 2.5 minutes faster or slower rather than your actual marathon pace. So putting it into perspective like that actually makes it seem very, very easy, very slow. You know, I think a lot of runners, you know, and they're like, oh, I can run a marathon and, you know, 302 or something, and that's 7 minute mile pace. You know, are you doing your easy runs at 9 minute mile pace? They might not be. And so the spread of easy to race pace and sort of the relationship between these paces, I think is really important, you know? And I think, you know, just hearing you talk about how you just run 24 miles at 6 minute mile pace, I know, you know, many listeners might be clutching their pearls a little bit, but adding that context is really important because you're getting your recovery on some of these runs. And, you know, that's what's enabling you to actually hammer on these long runs too.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing, like even, you know, one of my best friends and, you know, former training partners, Noah Drotti, like if we run together, we'll be like, all right, let's, how many Drotti miles can we get? And that's an 8 mile or 8 minute plus. So we're usually in that for at least 1 mile, like sometimes two miles, like on an easy run, and we'll end up averaging 735, 740 for just an easy 8 to 10, you know, and we'll look down and we'll hit, like, let's say we ran like 8 miles in an hour or 59 minutes and 50 seconds. Like, ooh, we ran that a little too fast, man. Whoops. You know, 'cause it's just pure recovery, you know, and Noah's a 209 guy, you know? So we're just like, it's just go out, get the miles, go home, recover. You know, that's all those kind of days serve, really.
Yeah, I've had Matt Meyer on the podcast, and he's a runner. He lives in Boulder. He's a running coach, strength coach. I think he's run about 2:34 in the marathon. So, you know,
he's a great human being.
Great guy. Yeah. And he loves calling some of these really slow miles just dog shit pace, which I find hilarious. And it's just like, you know, how slow can we go? You know, here's like a 2:34 marathoner doing runs at like 8:30 per mile, which for someone like that is just such an easy jog. And it's helpful to know that it's almost necessary to treat some of your miles as like, I'm getting in the miles, but there's no performance expectations right now. And differentiating between these are important miles, pace is important, I need to hit this. And then some miles are not that important. And you can just sort of do your Noah Drotty miles. I love that term. And just get in some easy time on feet, and you're maybe in zone one, but who cares? You know, you're getting that recovery, you're getting in the volume, and it enables the harder work that is actually going to help you accomplish your goals.
Yeah, I'll expand on that even. So my former teammate at Hanson's, Shadrach Biwott, you know, he's third in Boston, fourth in New York. We'd call it the Shadrach Shuffle, because like our second runs prior to the 2020 trials, we'd rarely break 9 minutes the first mile. And he'd be like, Rafiki, just go if it's too slow. But he's like, he's dragging his feet, like cutting the heck out of his shoes, because he's just like literally shuffling his feet. He's like, dude, this is how, like, you know, he's Kenyan. He's like, this is what we do on our second runs, man. Like, we just flush it out. Like, it's not hard. It's just go get 4 or 5 miles. Like, you know, it's, you do 4 miles and it takes 40 minutes, but it's like, whatever. He's like, we're going to have the same workout tomorrow. You know, like, we're like, I'll probably drop you in a workout. Like, no worries. I'm going to be just fine. So, yes. And that's, you know, from one of the world's best marathoners, like, just the goal is recovery on these, you know. You're not going to get any extra fitness from running 4 to 6 miles, you know, in the evening.
Yeah. There's that wonderful Kenyan tradition of like starting your runs at like 9 minute mile pace, and you'll have these, you know, 2:05 marathoners running the first couple miles or kilometers of their run at like 9 minute mile pace, which I think is just, it's kind of funny, but it's also very instructive. And it just shows that you don't have to hammer all the time. And some of that slow running is really important. We've certainly got off track from your 50 mile world record here, Charlie, but a follow-up question I had for you was, how did you approach fueling for a 50 mile world record? So you were running for 4 hours and 48 minutes. That is, you know, similar to an amount of time that many runners would spend running a marathon. Did you have sort of a similar fueling strategy as you would in a marathon? It just sort of went on for a longer time period for you?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and this is where I kind of took a tangent earlier, so I'll circle back to it when I mentioned my injury in 2022. So I still needed my OTQ this past fall because I wasn't really fit enough earlier in 2023 to get it. So I was like, well, I think I can double dip, do a marathon as a workout, like a month out from the 50 miler, and just not taper a little bit for it, not necessarily fully taper, get my OTQ, and then do a true taper 4 weeks later for Tunnel Hill. So it ended up working out. McCurdy Micro was set up just for OTQ. People wanted to chase the standard. I knew it was way fitter than 218. So I ended up running, you know, 216.10, really tied my PR to the exact second, which is a little bit of a bummer because I think fully tapered, I was in 215 low, maybe 214 high shape, but I digress. With that being said, fueling wise, like, had a very, like, I knew if I nailed fueling, like, you know, that's just going to help you in a marathon. So, there was like a 2.94 mile loop. So roughly every 3 miles we had our bottles. So I had a plan set up of, first bottle was going to be, it was just electrolytes with a Morton gel on it. Third one was just liquid carbs, 20 grams of carbs there. And then next bottle was liquid carbs with a ketone shot in it. So I rotated that 1-2-3, 1-2-3, or roughly every 5K. Tunnel Hill was a little more unique. And I'll say I put a ton of practice into that too, where I was doing, you know, there's a 3 mile loop in North Boulder. It's just like kind of near Tom Watson Park. I'm sure you've, you know, been on Monarch Road up there. So there's a 3 mile loop, it's your 2.97, where I'd set up a bottle like 3 miles in from Tom Watson, and they just repeat it into 3 mile loop. So, you know, did a 24 mile at 5:32 pace there, you know, a month out from McCurdy's to practice, put that into play, you know, in the marathon. So I'd gotten that down, nailed it down. So getting towards Tunnel Hill, it was like, it's a unique scenario, right? Cause it's a double up and back ultra where you go roughly 13 miles south, 13 miles, no, well, 13 miles back to the finish, and you continue straight for roughly another 11 or so. Then you come back down to the finish. So it's, you know, double up and back, but you start and finish at the essentially the same central area. And it's not every every 5K, you know, like you'd have in a major marathon or like that, or like we had in McCurdy, or like I'd practice. So it was like, all right, I know I need to one, get my carbs in. I still want to keep the ketone shots in there for focus. I definitely want to make sure I'm staying properly hydrated as well. So, the stations ended up being, they averaged out to be about 5 miles. There was 10 stations that my crew could be at. So it was like, don't quote me, but it was like 5.5, 10.9, 13 point something, 16 point something, 19, 25 ish or six ish. So it was a little longer, a little shorter, roughly five ish is what it averaged out to be. So I just kind of sort of copy and paste of what I did in the marathon, but I just went, electrolytes in a Morton 40 gel. So I'm getting, or 160. So 40 grams of carbs there. So way more carbs, chasing with electrolytes, help with absorption, stay hydrated. Then the next one was just going to be a bottle of, liquid carbs mixed with ketone shot. And I just went back and forth with those two. Then also had ketones and an extra gel stashed, just in my half tights, just in case I needed it, and ended up using them at about mile 42, 43. Cause there was a gap between like 39 point something and almost like 47 or like 40-ish and 47, where like there wasn't any station out there. So it was like, I thought I wanted to save it to probably about 45 and ended up burning that at 42. Cause I knew I was getting tired and running low on gas. So, at that point too, it was just trying to get as much in as I could. And that was kind of the mind games I put with myself too, where, and it got kind of hard, was, all right, it's getting hard, but like, you're going to feel better, like when you get your nutrition. So get it, finish it, and like, make sure you finish all the liquid in there, cause it's going to make you feel better, you know, and just play a little mind game where it's like, all right, I don't feel good right now. Like my stomach feels a little full cause I just drank this, but give it 5 minutes and it'll start kicking in the carbs, you know, you have, and you just like keep playing this little game, even though you don't feel any better. Then it's like, oh, like I don't feel any better, but 3 miles up ahead is my next bottle. I'll definitely feel better then, or my next gel, you know? So you just keep playing these little mind games over and over and over. But ultimately that was kind of the strategy I used, was, you know, retain the gel taped to, well, electrolytes in the bottle, gel taped to it, finish the gel, chase with electrolytes, liquid carbs, ketone, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, repeating throughout it. So
I'm a big fan of the mind games. You know, we can call this positive self-talk. We can call this being delusional. We can call this lying to yourself. Whatever it is, I think you should embrace it. You know, like I actively lie to myself in races. You feel good. This isn't uncomfortable. You have more in the tank. You know, I go out for a run and it's like sleeting rain and 33 degrees. I tell myself, this is a great day for a run. I'm having so much fun out here. So yeah, I think runners should be a little bit more delusional. It might help them, you know, get a little more out of themselves. But did you feel, you know, powerful, well-fueled, energetic in, say, the last 10 miles or so of the 50 miler? Because it seems like your fueling approach was pretty dialed. I mean, you have a plan for hydration, electrolytes, carbohydrates. You're even throwing some ketones in there. And I'm just curious, like, how you felt.
Yeah, honestly, I felt like, truthfully, and don't want to sound arrogant, but it felt like a cakewalk through about 30. You know, started getting, so the course is, it's net flat the first part. Like the first marathon is pretty flat out and back. Like you don't notice anything really. And then from really about 32, 33 up until about 39-ish, you're going uphill the entire time. Very, very, very gradual. It's only like 400 feet like throughout it. But it's like, it starts to take its toll a little bit. But also too, like you play that mind game where it's like, just get like stick it here. Get up to this point, get to the turnaround, and then you have a downhill pretty much to the finish almost. Flattens out a couple miles before the finish, like mile and a half, two. But it's like, ride this, man, because then you're going home. So it, you know, the last 10 miles, to answer your question, was it got really, really hard at about 42. That's because I went out a little hotter than I should have. You know, my plan before the race is to go 540 to 545, have some time in the bank. And that was just me talking to Dez as well, where she's like, you're definitely fit enough to go stick faster, but it's like, you've never gone 40 miles in your life. My biggest training day was 35 miles. It was a 28 mile morning with, you know, a 7 mile shakeout in the afternoon to get 35. The marathon day I did 33, you know, long warm up, ran the marathon, 5 mile cool down, like a 5 or 3 mile warm up. So it's like, I'm in uncharted territory. So it's like, I definitely wanted some time in the bank. I definitely probably went a little too hot and ended up kind of blowing up towards the end, but had enough time to work with that I made it home. So, but also too, I, you know, the last few miles as we are going downhill, didn't feel very good because I already have 40-ish miles on my legs and I'm essentially loading my quads going downhill. And it's kind of a bummer too, because the rate at which you're going downhill, like fully fresh, it's like perfect for trying to rip. But I just had, you know, put so much energy into like getting up there and then getting to the turnaround that I had not a ton of power left, but again, had time in the bank and a lot to work with. And fortunately had a pretty good fueling strategy to make sure I didn't blow up too badly. So, and yeah, ultimately, you know, made it to that line. So
yeah. What is it, like a negative 2 or 3% grade, like just a subtle, even just a 1%, it's just enough to give you a little bit of gravity at your back. It's that feels so good just to hammer that.
Yeah. It's great. Unless your quads are like already blown up and bonking a little bit. So that was kind of tricky. Like it was almost like a mind game I had where it's like, oh, it's going to be so much easier going down. But it's like, so I'm just essentially loading my quads. I already have 40 plus miles in them at, and at that point too, I was, you know, I didn't have a mile above 540 until mile 25. That was a 540 point, whatever. I even had a couple of I had a 528, 527, mile 13 and 14. So like I had put a ton of work in, was at really about 538, 539 pace. You know, ultimately ended up averaging, you know, 546. I had a couple 630s in there towards the end, like my last two besides my 49th to 50 mile. But yeah, it's very nice unless your quads are already blown up for sure.
I think anyone who's run one of those like Revel downhill marathons knows exactly what you're talking about. It's not fun.
Yeah. Or even, you know, even people talk, I've never run Boston. It's obviously on the bucket list. People are like, yep, don't go too hard the first half, 'cause you got to climb on the back half. You know, you see that, you even see that with, you know, I'm not critiquing, he's, you know, the best marathoner ever, you know, Kipchoge, like, you know, he just blew up the other year, you know, 'cause he was just a super, super aggressive downhill and didn't have a ton of pop on the hills. So see guys like Fobbs that know how to run it, like they're chilling, then they go attack mode and grab 10 people on the back half to finish top 10, you know?
Yeah, that was my experience at Boston. I think the second mile has a pretty substantial downhill, which ended up being my fastest mile of the race. You don't want the second mile of a marathon to be your fastest. And it came back to bite me, as it always will in a marathon race. So word to the wise, you know, you got to go out conservatively at Boston. It'll come back to get you. Well, Charlie, this has been pretty awesome. Just hearing about your approach to training. Everyone loves a comeback story, especially with someone who's as accomplished as you are getting back into things. So, you know, I'm rooting for you. I wish you the best. What is coming up for you? If everything stays on track, you stay healthy, you build your fitness back up, what are you hoping for the rest of the year?
Yeah. December 7th, 100K Worlds. Hopefully come back with a global gold medal is the goal. I think on the right day, have a good build, get healthy here this spring. I don't think anyone in the world can beat me at the 100K distance. If I'm not selected for that team, which really hope USATF selects me, like I have a world record in my back pocket. I feel like it'd be semi-foolish to leave the world record holder. Judging it's 50 miles on 100K, got a little farther to go. But if, let's say, that's not in the cards, I'm going to go for the 100K world record at some point. Anyways, so, but if I'm not running 100K Worlds, it'd be a 100K world record attempt. But that's kind of the plan. Just get healthy and then probably piece together maybe a fall marathon prior, but nothing's locked in yet. So just kind of hoping for that selection September 1st, and then we'll go for a world gold in India.
I love it. There's that aggression again that is going to carry you far, my friend. Best of luck to you. This has been super fun hearing about your training and your approach to racing, the mind games, everything that we've talked about has just been so interesting to me. Best of luck with everything. I'm going to include a link to your Instagram profile in the show notes. So if folks want to follow your exploits and training as you get ready for this. But is there anywhere else that you want to direct folks to if they want to learn a little bit more about you and your running?
Honestly, I'd probably say Instagram. That's probably the way to do it. Twitter, I only troll my old college teammates. We just throw dumb inside jokes at each other. So Twitter's probably not a great option, but both handles are Lawrence_char. So nobody will get what we're talking about, which is fine. So probably IG's the way to go.
All right. Well, I'll have links to both if folks want to check out the inside jokes, but
perfect.
Thanks for making the time, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, Jason. Thank you, dude. Been fun.
What an episode. Thank you so much for listening and being part of our community here. If you're getting value from the Strength Running Podcast, if the show has helped your running or made you rethink how you approach your training, please consider leaving a review or a rating in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Those reviews are incredibly impactful and helpful for this small business. If you have questions about your running, feel free to email me at support@strengthrunning.com, or you can search our website at strengthrunning.com. For more digestible tips, videos, memes, and more, follow me on Instagram at JasonFitz1. We'll be in touch.